This is Wilson Hall, NBC News, with a special report. It started about 6 weeks ago during the Easter weekend. Communist forces moved through the demilitarized zone of Vietnam and, backed by tanks, rockets, and heavy artillery, zeroed in on the provincial capital of Quang Tri. This, said President Thieu, is the final battle to decide the survival of the Vietnamese people. Within a five-week period, North Vietnamese troops captured 22 miles of South Vietnamese territory, captured Quang Tri, threatened two other provincial capitals in the center of Vietnam, threatened the old imperial capital of Hue. President Nixon and his advisors thought or hoped the South Vietnamese troops could take over ground combat from U.S. forces. American air power would help them out, but the South Vietnamese army did not stop the advance, and U.S. bombers and helicopters couldn't do it either. President Nixon decided something else had to be done. On Monday night, he announced an escalation, drastic, dramatic, and potentially dangerous.
All entrances to North Vietnamese ports will be mined. To prevent access to these ports and North Vietnamese naval operations from these ports. United States forces have been directed to take appropriate measures within the internal and claimed territorial waters of North Vietnam to interdict the delivery of any supplies. Rail and all other communications will be cut off to the maximum extent possible. Air and naval strikes against military targets in North Vietnam will continue.
Since Mr. Nixon's Monday night order, airstrikes into North Vietnam have continued on a massive scale, and airstrikes in South Vietnam are attempting to knock out supply and troop buildups around Vietnam's third largest city, Hue. The old city of Hue is in direct line of the communist offensive. The old walled part of the city fell to the communists during the Tet Offensive of 1968. It took American Marines nearly a month to recapture it. Today, there are no American combat troops to defend Hue, only the South Vietnamese. The South Vietnamese lost Quang Tri to the north of Hue. Military experts say they do not expect another Quang Tri. This time, they say, the South Vietnamese are prepared to make a fight for it. William Dowell reports.
When Quang Tri, 30 miles to the north of here, fell a little more than a week ago, several thousand Vietnamese troops streamed through Hue. Most were broken and demoralized. Vietnamese officers had literally abandoned them, and many had walked out on foot. The result here in Hue was a general panic. The army in Quang Tri collapsed as a result of what American advisors off the record called a crisis in leadership. There was no reason to believe Hue would be any different. That panic has subsided now, at least partly because of a change in command. The commander of the Northern Military Region has been relieved and replaced by General Ngo Quang Trung. Probably one of the most dynamic and fastest-rising generals in the Vietnamese army. But besides the effect of Trung, the troops in Hue now are better than those who broke and ran at Quang Tri. It's these factors which make Hue so important. The feeling here is that if the South Vietnamese army can't hold with the best it has, the rest of the army will be so demoralized it probably will not be able to hold anywhere else. If the battle for Hue is lost, the war for Vietnam may be lost along with it. This is William Dowell, NBC News, in Hue.
The fall of Quang Tri last week and the manner in which it came about would seem to indicate, on the surface at least, that the administration's much-touted Vietnamization program is a colossal failure. President Nixon and his military advisors have long defended this costly program. The future of South Vietnam has virtually been made dependent upon it. And right now, that future seems none too bright. Phil Brady filed this analysis from Hong Kong.
South Vietnam now seems closer than ever before to a communist takeover. Allied officers blamed the government's dreary performance so far on poor leadership and Hanoi's use of better weapons. Well, there's a lot of truth in this, but it misses the basic point in this war, and that is motivation. The war is a test of will, and Hanoi believes the side that can hang on the longest will win. To do this, a soldier must be a true believer. He must be prepared to die for what he feels is right. Hanoi's cause is simple, to reunite Vietnam, and this is drummed into every soldier before he ever fires a shot. If Saigon had a cause, it was lost long ago, blurred and stained by corruption, politics, and the war itself. There is always the chance, of course, that when government troops can't run any farther, they'll turn and fight and stop the North Vietnamese. But this now seems unlikely, for Hanoi has always seemed more prepared to endure and to fight on. And after 27 years of war, the North Vietnamese now sense they're closing in for the kill, and the promise of victory can only help them fight harder. Phil Brady, NBC News, Hong Kong.
Hanoi has announced it will not only fight harder on the ground because of the new escalation of the war, but fight hard to break the stranglehold of minefields that now block their harbor entrances, the attempt to squeeze off war supply routes. Critics of the president's escalation of the war have charged that his newest orders bring the United States into a dangerous confrontation with the Russians and the Chinese, charged that he's risking World War III, the lives of American flyers, the lives of American POWs, and the lives of North Vietnamese civilians in order to vindicate his Vietnam policies. The president, before making his hard decision, was aware that these criticisms would be leveled at him. What led him to make the decision? NBC News White House correspondent Richard Valeriani.
The idea of lining North Vietnamese harbors has long been advocated by the most ardent hawks, but in the past it has always been rejected. Even the first secret study prepared for the National Security Council after President Nixon took office seriously challenged the effectiveness of such action. Why, then, has President Nixon chosen that course of action now? There are several reasons, according to administration officials. One is that the North Vietnamese are now fighting a different kind of war, a conventional war with tanks and heavy artillery, and they need a lot of gasoline and oil to keep their offensive going. Most of that gas and oil is delivered through Haiphong. The same is true of the trucks that carry the supplies south. Another reason for closing North Vietnamese harbors now is that the risks are considered less because of changing geopolitical patterns. The danger of communist Chinese involvement, for example, has apparently evaporated following Mr. Nixon's visit to Peking. And it's hoped that the Russians will decide their relations with the United States, and the prospects for several negotiating breakthroughs are more important than Vietnam. But perhaps most important, as presidential adviser Henry Kissinger indicated to newsmen the other day, Mr. Nixon felt he had no other choice. Despite all the heralded boasts about the success of Vietnamization, South Vietnam was unraveling in the face of the enemy offensive, and the president felt the credibility of his entire foreign policy was at stake. Mr. Nixon had decided that the other side would not agree to a negotiated settlement except on its own terms. So he took strong measures designed not only to save South Vietnam, but to try to end the fighting as well. But escalation has not worked in the past, and there are serious doubts about whether or not it will work now. Richard Valeriani, NBC News at the White House.
Will the president's escalation be effective? According to the Pentagon, there were 36 ships in the harbor of Haiphong when President Nixon announced his decision to use mines. Admiral Elmo Zumwalt, the chief of naval operations, was interviewed earlier today by NBC News correspondent Robert Goralski. He said he didn't know how many ships still remained in the harbor.
We know that some have left, and they, of course, got out in time, and properly the mines did not actuate. The others who have remained would be very unwise to leave at this point.
As I recall, there were 16 Soviet ships that were in the North Vietnamese ports, and I think there's only one that has left has been Soviet. So you have about 15 Russian ships that are still in North Vietnamese waters.
That's essentially accurate, according to my information.
Perhaps more importantly, Admiral, most of these ships have unloaded or were in the process of unloading. What about other ships coming into North Vietnamese waters? How many are on the way?
The numbers there are, again, uncertain. We do know that there are some in the vicinity. They'll be well accounted for as they get closer to the area.
Now, your ships out there, Admiral, they are on what I believe you call notification. They will advise each and every ship coming in that the area is mined.
That is accurate.
And what form is this taken? How are the ships told?
They'll be told by every available means. Depending on their communications, if necessary, our ships will go right up alongside and pass the word by megaphone.
Do the Chinese have any ships involved, or are they primarily concerned with the rail traffic and road traffic into North Vietnam?
There were Chinese ships in the harbor. They also do have rail connections. As you know, it's been made clear that we'll make every effort within North Vietnam to interdict rail communications.
What about I know the rules of engagement, obviously, are something you can't discuss in detail, but what are the rules for the ships who cross the minefield? I think there's a great deal of doubt because of what came from the White House and what Mr. Laird said yesterday.
This is an area upon which I would not want to comment. I think that what's been said to date is the way it should be left, namely that we will take all those measures necessary to see to it that the supplies do not enter the territory of North Vietnam.
Admiral, there's been some question about the term blockade. Many people continue to use it. Is this a blockade?
No, this is not a blockade in the accepted legal sense. This is an action restricted to the claimed territorial waters of North Vietnam by the passive act of placing mines there, leaving to other nations the decision as to whether or not to do damage to their ships.
Chief of Naval Operations Elmo Zumwalt. Tonight, more than 12 hours after the mines in North Vietnamese ports were armed to detonate, none has, as far as we know. How effective will the mined harbors be? Robert Goralski again reports from the Pentagon.
No one at the Defense Department is talking about the mines except to say they have been activated. There's no word on how many there are, how long it will be before they become inert, or anything else. Defense Secretary Melvin Laird and others have described mines, however, as a passive weapon. In Laird's words, these mines won't go out and seek the ships. If ships seek out mines, then there will be an explosion. That's like saying ribs can be hurt if they crash into someone's thrusting elbow. The fact is, the mines are lethal. They can be set off by any ship passing by. They are difficult to sweep, and they're far more destructive than the World War II types seen on late TV movies. But perhaps the best description of the mines is that they serve as a quarantine. Once North Vietnam is sealed off, as is the hope of the Defense Department planners, then U.S. air and naval power can be applied to just about anything within North Vietnam. Robert Goralski, NBC News at the Pentagon.
The question in everyone's mind, what will the Russians do about the orders to keep Soviet supplies out of North Vietnam? What about a confrontation, the coming summit meeting in Moscow? Alvin Rosenfeld from the State Department in Washington.
The U.S. and Soviet Russia are deeply involved in the game of nations, a game as complex as chess and much more serious. Vietnam is simply one of the prizes in that game, not the only prize. Thus, while U.S. aircraft were dropping mines in North Vietnamese waters, American and Soviet delegates were earnestly negotiating to improve relations, control the strategic arms race, foster trade, and settle old debts. And today, at about the same time Moscow was condemning the mining operation, the Soviet Foreign Trade Minister and Ambassador to Brennan were having a cordial chat with Mr. Nixon. The administration apparently is gambling that Moscow wants the summit as much as Washington does, perhaps more. The thinking is that China remains Russia's main concern and that the Soviets hope to use the summit to clear up European matters and thus have their western flank protected should there be new problems with Peking in the east. At least that's the theory in some administration circles. But, of course, the Soviets can play just as complicated a game as the Americans. They are fully aware that Mr. Nixon wants a summit and badly wants an end to the Vietnam headache in this election year. They show no signs of abandoning their Vietnam ally. They have not indicated what they will do about the challenge to their shipping, but there are other ways to support Hanoi, and there is time, since Hanoi has supplies for two more months at least. What is not clear is whether the Soviets will try to checkmate the U.S. in Vietnam or quietly work with the U.S. for a solution which saves everyone's face. Alvin Rosenfeld, NBC News, Washington.
The new phase of the war triggered a wave of anti-war demonstrations across the nation. At colleges, universities, military installations, the U.N., demonstrators shouted, lay down, chained themselves, prayed, and jeered. Arrests, at least 1,000. The theme of one demonstration on Capitol Hill, do something Congress about stopping the war. Can or will Congress do anything? Robert McCormick reports from Capitol Hill.
The chameleon on the crazy quilt was coherent and predictable in his reactions compared to congressional behavior on the latest Vietnam War developments. Only one thing seems to stand out with any clarity. Anti-war feeling in both the Senate and House has been increased by the president's recent decisions and by the way they were made. But it does not follow that this will be translated into congressional action that might conceivably force an end to American participation in the fighting. Congress has only one relatively dependable device at its disposal to force our withdrawal from Indochina. That's to cut off funds for the fighting. A proposal to use this extreme and drastic power has been pending in the Senate for days, but a showdown was repeatedly postponed. Neither side was quite sure whether it had the votes to win. Neither side knew whether its chances would be increased or lessened as the days went by. But as of now, one crucial vote is scheduled for next Tuesday. Meanwhile, a majority of House Democrats, for the first time, show signs of agreeing to some sort of end-the-war legislation. In other words, Congress might finally decide to start throwing its weight around. Robert McCormick, NBC News, Washington.
The furor over the steps President Nixon has taken has overshadowed the fact that in last Monday's announcement, he extended new terms for ending the war.
First, all American prisoners of war must be returned. Second, there must be an internationally supervised ceasefire throughout Indochina. Once prisoners of war are released, once the internationally supervised ceasefire has begun, we will stop all acts of force throughout Indochina. And at that time, we will proceed with a complete withdrawal of all American forces from Vietnam within 4 months.
Previously, Mr. Nixon had mentioned 6 months as the withdrawal period. Now, quietly, he has lowered it to 4. Many wonder why the North Vietnamese don't accept these terms. The Viet Cong representative in Paris today had a candid answer to that one. Why quit while we're winning? Bernard Kaplan from Paris on chances for a negotiated peace.
It's an irony that although a negotiated peace in Vietnam seems less likely than ever at the moment, the two sides' latest peace proposals are also closer than ever. This is why observers here are convinced that secret contacts between North Vietnam and Washington are still going on to test whether negotiations can be resumed. Within the past few days, both sides have carefully signaled readiness for this to happen. Twice in the past week, North Vietnamese officials here have publicly pledged not to set up a communist regime in South Vietnam, a promise taken to mean that they'll work through an officially neutralist government for an indefinite period. Meanwhile, President Nixon's latest statement that American forces would withdraw within 4 months after a ceasefire is considered significant because it comes closer to the communist demand for a set pullout date. The United States is also no longer demanding the North Vietnamese withdraw from areas they've conquered. And on another major sticking point, the fate of Saigon President Thieu, other American officials have at least implied that this is no longer a paramount consideration. Bernard Kaplan, NBC News, Paris.
We have on our open circuit NBC's Jim Laurie in Saigon and Herbert Kaplow in Washington. First to you, Jim, what is new in Saigon?
In Saigon at the present time, the city is suffering the latest imposition of martial law by President Thieu. For the first time since the beginning of this offensive, the city is now beginning to look like it is at war. There are militiamen all around the town, troops on the streets, and all of the bars, dance halls, and restaurants having entertainment have at last been closed.
Herb Kaplow in Washington, did the administration think that we could fight the North Vietnamese to a negotiating table?
The options have been narrowed considerably, and as somebody mentioned earlier in the program, the president now has really very few alternatives. His immediate purpose, as evidenced by a speech the other night, was to relieve the enemy pressure and shore up the South Vietnamese military. Beyond that, there never has been a serious thought in administration circles for some time that the Allies could achieve a conventional or a standard military victory, and at best, we would come away with something won at a negotiating table.
Did the administration believe or was convinced by people from Saigon, presumably, that the Vietnamization program could work, Herb?
Yes, I think the administration believed the Vietnamization was working. Now, this is perhaps the ultimate test. The administration is disappointed in the showing and the performance of some of the South Vietnamese units. It is not yet ready to convict the whole effort. Right now, and maybe Jim can confirm that from Vietnam, there seems to be a breather, perhaps both sides regrouping. There is new leadership in some elements of the South Vietnamese military. And the administration is hoping that if the fighting does start up again, which appears certain, that now, in this round two, that the South Vietnamese will acquit themselves better and will more prove the feasibility of Vietnamization.
Jim, do you think that will bear itself out?
Most of the problems with the South Vietnamese performance so far seems to have been a question of morale and leadership. The morale among the troops does seem to have picked up as President Nixon has announced his actions against North Vietnam. And the leadership has been improved in at least three areas with the replacement of three generals. The situation, for example, right now at An Lạc is still
Jim, may I ask you a question? This is Kaplow. First, what's the enemy doing at this point, and why does there seem to be this breather?
In the northern part of the country, it appears the North Vietnamese are having some serious supply problems. They have gotten their supplies in place in the regions near the Laotian border, but it's apparently taking them some time to get them, for example, around the city of Hue, where they need a heavy artillery for pounding that city with as much firepower as possible. They need to get their troops into position. And apparently American air power is taking its toll in dealing with both of their supply efforts and their manpower efforts.
And what about enemy reserves?
The North Vietnamese have committed, as we understand it, nearly all of their divisions to the battle. They have two divisions apparently left in Laos and one division in North Vietnam that have so far been uncommitted. They do seem to have a remarkable resilience for bringing in troops when everybody else thought that they had no more troops to be committed. So we certainly cannot say at this time that they are having a serious shortage of manpower. They no doubt will come up with the men necessary.
Jim Lurie in Saigon, what seems to be going on around the North Vietnamese harbors, the mined harbor entrances? Is there any new news on that?
The last report that we heard here was that there were still 31 ships at Haiphong Harbor. The mines, of course, have been activated, but we have received no new information as to the condition of those 31 ships. We know that bombing is continuing, but the U.S. command here in Saigon is providing us with very few details.
Well, thank you very much, Jim Lurie in Saigon, Herb Kaplow in Washington. Unfortunately, we never have enough time for this. And good luck to you, Jim, over there. From Jim Lurie in Saigon, from whom we have just heard, the latest news from Saigon is that there are still 31 ships in the harbor at Haiphong, apparently no attempt to run the minefields. From Herb Kaplow in Washington, from whom we have just heard, a belief that the administration had, that Vietnamization was working, and it apparently was not, obviously, and that the South Vietnamese troops could not hack it. Right at the present time, there's still a big battle going on in An Lock, which is 60 miles north of Saigon, a very dreadful battle, but nothing yet around Hue in the north, although the enemy troops are surrounding it. Tonight, three of the world's nuclear powers are in direct confrontation, China, Russia, and the United States. None has threatened to use nuclear weapons, but each has them. The Russians and the Chinese have said the minefields are illegal, impermissible, but they have not said what they intend to do about them. Vietnam has known war almost continuously for three decades, and tonight it still appears to be the war that will not end. This has been a special report from NBC News. Wilson Hall reporting.